Evening, Dan.
Evening, Omar. How are you?
I'm very good, thanks. Obviously, when we were prepping before this chat, I asked you if you'd seen the Liverpool highlights, which proved to be a very good segue onto this conversation today.
I have my uses, you know, on occasion.
it was not only an incredible game. I mean, the goals were absolutely astonishing. And actually, there's a very good piece in the Times today around Liverpool's long-range shooting, which I thought was a kind of a really good observation around trying to create different ways of scoring and breaking down deep line defences. But obviously, the effects have been pretty stunning. But they weren't live on UK television, which I suppose was the main point of discussion today.
Well, I think that's right. And there's a few interesting strands to this, obviously, and we can go through the summary and the detail. But I wonder whether one of the points, especially for piracy issues in the UK for illegal streams, is putting more games on and providing and making sure that the content is easily accessible, relatively reasonable, and of higher quality. Then I think the whack-a-mole approach of trying to bring down all of these feeds, because there obviously is demand, becomes less of an issue because more games are now, and significantly more games, are going to be shown live in the UK. So the whole discussion we were having, I think you're totally right, around did you see the Liverpool-Fulham goals? Well, yes, we saw them half an hour after the end of the game, because that's the highlights package that is available on the Sky Sports app. But unfortunately, I was left following what was happening on Twitter and on Twitter feeds or otherwise, and on commentary on the BBC, because unfortunately those games at the moment weren't live, but in a couple of years' time will be.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously the headlines of the deal is that it's a 4% uplift on a per annum basis from the previous right cycle, which was a rollover from the one before that. So 4% increase, but with a significant increase in the number of games, so 200 to 270, a significant chunk of those coming from those games that will have been displaced or will be displaced from European kickoffs on a Thursday onto Sunday. So Liverpool being a really good example of that this weekend, played on Thursday. And therefore had to play on the Sunday, but wasn't on TV because it wasn't one of the TV picks. And you had, I think you had Chelsea as well, who were behind, or not televised, and actually had the worst game of the three or four games at 2 o'clock, the Palace West Ham game, which was actually on TV, which I think left a lot of fans disillusioned. So I think your point around piracy is a very good one. I think this is a kind of good outcome in many ways for broadcasters, for the Premier League to have these games now televised. Fans in the UK are less likely to pirate them, which obviously means, you know, less revenues, because the reason people are pirating these games is because they're not able to access them in a lot of cases, and therefore they may not have the Sky subscriptions in the first place. So broadly a good result, I think, for the Premier League and for Sky, and who have obviously gobbled up a huge number of those games. And we were chatting earlier, I mean, the volume of games that Sky are going to have now with the EFL deal is pretty incredible, isn't it?
I think there's lots of interesting bits. If I take maybe two or three, not to steal any thunder that you have on some analysis that I know that you want to talk about too, but I think there are loads of quite cool talking points and strands that we can take, but if I maybe take about two or three and then we can go off in different directions. I think for Klopp, it's interesting that TNT have got the, or what was BT, have still got those 12:30 kickoffs. Query whether that means more of an issue for Klopp if he's actually even a Liverpool manager by the time that the new rights package stuff comes around. I think as an aside, the fascinating bit that maybe a lot, some people have only just recognizing, myself included, once I was reading the Premier League press release, was for the first time in the UK, I know we touched on it slightly before, what they've said is that all matches taking place outside of the Saturday 3 p.m. closed period, including all those displaced Sunday 2 p.m.s because of club participation in European competitions, will be broadcast live. That effectively means now that if your game is on, it's 3 p.m. on a Saturday. Fine, you can't, it won't be on TV, but every other game in the Premier League season will be televised, almost all of them on Sky and a few of them on TNT. So that's a big sea change. Obviously, we've got, going back to the piracy point slightly, those 3 p.m. matches, query whether still people will try and still find those feeds because they're still not available because of the blackout period that we can talk about on a few particular parts. But I think that as a couple of summary points, a pretty groundbreaking. And I think the other bit that you touched on as well, Omar, which was important, is the reliance, I guess, historical reliance that the Premier League had on Sky and BT, now TNT, for its domestic broadcast revenues. So the domestic deal for the 22-25 period was around that £4.9 billion mark over 3 years. So that three-year deal is almost £5 billion. But this last deal was that tipping point, if I remember correctly, which was the fact that the international deal was valued at around £5 billion, i.e. that tipping point where the foreign broadcast revenues became more valuable than the domestic broadcast revenues. Remember, obviously, the domestic broadcast revenues were based on 200 live games through the various packages. Now that's up to 270, if I'm...
Yep, that's right.
If I recall correctly, 270. That then, I know we're going to talk about maybe the value, and that'll be interested in maybe your thoughts on that. Obviously, the number is bigger, but the query is, Omar, which I know we talked about before this call, which would be before the chat, which would be really helpful for a bit of insight on, is to the headline number's bigger, but what about the price per game? What about the trends? What about what that this deal means for other broadcasters, other rights holders in other markets too?
Yeah, absolutely. So I suppose the broader context and the reason I think this is being seen as a bit of a win for the league is the broader context, media rights are proving pretty hard to sell at the moment. There's broader macroeconomic reasons for that. But also I think there's a feeling that, you know, for a long time, the streaming was seen as the potential to disrupt the broadcast landscape. You know, there's forever been talk of Amazon, Netflix, Meta, whoever else coming in and placing huge prices on the media rights, but they've not, by and large, and I think therefore the competition in the marketplace is less than what it has been perceived to be before. So therefore, for the likes of Sky and TNT, it's not been worth, historically, it's been worth them kind of bidding up to make sure they don't lose the rights. But now it seems that competition has ebbed away, which is why I think a flatlining is to be expected. And also, you know, at the end of the day, like, how much bigger can the UK football market really be? You know, there's only so many people, and these are big values given the amount of consumers there are in the UK. Whereas internationally, you know, you're talking about the potential to reach hundreds of millions of fans, which is why we've seen that tipping point. So, yeah, I think, you know, the fact that the Premier League has increased the volume of games, my colleague Ben wrote a piece today around the fact that the average value of game has fallen significantly. I think it's something like 40-odd% down from its peak two cycles ago. That is, I suppose, you know, for the Premier League, you know, trying to create more volume to try and make sure that the rights value stays up. I think that's a massive red flag or warning sign for other leagues, where a lot of other leagues are selling all their games already. So they're already kind of maxed out on volume. The Premier League hadn't maxed out on volume on its domestic rights, and it was basically able to flatline. If you're maxed out on volume, what does that mean for your rights? If you can't kind of pull that lever anymore, you're essentially selling the same product. You're not able to sell more of the product. And we've seen that with France, which is obviously the most notable case, struggling to sell its media rights at the moment. Germany will be going to market soon as well. So I think that's a warning sign for some of those other big leagues. And obviously even the smaller leagues are going to be up against it as well. And again, similarly for the EFL, one of the big reasons they were able to secure a pretty big uplift in their media rights was because of the volume of games that they've sold. Again, to your point, all All games outside 3 p.m. kickoffs in the EFL will be available. It's going to be a huge, huge volume of games available. Now, the fact that the average has gone down has been used as a bit of a, well, you know, as the bubble burst point. I don't think that is necessarily true with the Premier League, because ultimately the additional games that are being sold, while some of them are, you know, somewhat attractive, so the Liverpool Fulhams, you know, some of them are not going to be attractive. You know, all your best inventory has been sold. It's by and large the big matches are televised on TV, with a couple of exceptions. I think you've had games like I want to say Chelsea Newcastle perhaps was a 3 p.m. kickoff in recent weeks. So you've had a couple, particularly now with Newcastle coming into the mix. You've got Big Seven, so you know you can't necessarily, there's, let you know, you might not capture all of those games between the top seven teams, but by and large the games that are coming onto the market aren't as attractive as the ones before, so naturally the average is going to fall. So yeah, as I say, I think broadly a good result for the Premier League, but a bit of a warning sign for other leagues that are going to be up against it when selling their media rights. But the international landscape, I think, looks pretty good for the Premier League.
I think the really interesting thing as well, as you touched on, and there's a great piece that Dave Powell, who's one of the Liverpool Echo writers, has put on Substack around the actual numbers. So the numbers, as you said, the average has fallen, even though, so that big number is 6.7 billion is the headline number, which obviously is a big jump, a 1.8 billion jump. But that extra year means the value has actually risen. The value of each annual year has only risen by 42 mil a season, I think, is the notion, i.e., I'm trying to look at these figures now, 1.63 to 1.67. But I think the thing, in terms of sort of wider context that, again, we were talking about before, Omar, is we talked, I think, about 2 months ago around when the EFL announced its deal. I know you touched on it just then. The EFL is basically, or rather the Premier League, is almost doing the same as the EFL now, which is all non-3 p.m. games are more or less going to be on TV. I think that is interesting for a number of reasons, mainly the bit that you just said there, which maybe we can talk a tiny bit more about, which is the amount of games that Sky are going to have on its broadcasting channels is going to be huge. I think if I remember correctly, it was, I think Sky said that there was going to be 10 EFL live EFL games on its channels per weekend. And then if I'm looking now down the Premier League number, I think it was a minimum of, was it a minimum of five, I think, per weekend that Sky are going to broadcast? So that's 15 live English matches from Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, majority Sunday, maybe Saturday, but probably most games on that Sunday. I wonder whether the query, Omar, might be soon, is that there might be some narrative which is, in marketing narrative, the Sky might need to put their prices up a little bit, because they're showing that they've actually got more games to be able to broadcast and might be to a slightly bigger audience. So query, value and volume now as particular question marks. I think the other really big story coming out this week, which has gone a little bit under the radar too, is the Carney review and recommendations and government actually signing up to everything, specifically this WSL 3 p.m. point. So again, we've got EFL live games apart from 3 p.m. We've got Premier League live games apart from 3 p.m. And dependent on what the Premier League and EFL say, I guess, to WSL and NewCo and to Nicky Doucet and the new leadership team at the WSL, query whether there actually might be a number of live WSL games in the next coming months and years, so that, again, you have that appointment of view for the WSL, which I'm actually a huge fan of, in truth, and all that issues around whether that dilutes attendances for all types of games, or whether actually the WSL and women's football is a different market and a different product to the traditional market and market that you know, you have as a football fan. So I think my takeaway, very briefly and in a very long-winded way of saying, is come the next couple of years, UK football fans are going to have a huge amount of content to be able to consume, especially from Sky. Sky, for the first time, you know, ever, I think, is going to have a huge, huge number of games available to be able to broadcast. And again, to your point, Omar, which again, I'd be really interested in your views on, you know, I know you were chatting about how BT have sometimes done their games and goal shows, whether there's actually going to be new innovative ways that the broadcasters are going to go about showing live matches, but also doing goal shows or other things, which might actually, you know, bring a new fan, a new consumer to the table who might not want that 90-minute live game, but might want the drama and the intrigue of all of those games that can be showed outside of the 3 p.m. watershed.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's start with the championship point and the volume of games there. So typically when we talk about the value, the intrinsic value of the product, it broadly breaks down into four areas. And we often talk about quality, you know, the quality of the product, the quality of the thing on the pitch. You know, that's why the Premier League is most valuable. The level of jeopardy, the level of uncertainty. And again, that's why the Premier League, but also the Championship is valuable, because you don't know what's going to happen in the Championship. The level of connection, to the extent to which you care about the action. Obviously, English football is a rich, deep history, and all the clubs within English football have communities that follow them and care deeply about these. So that's a big reason for rights value. And then the fourth lever is volume, and there's been a lot of emphasis on that volume point. That's what the EFL have really pulled in the latest broadcast cycle. As you say, the amount of games that are going to be shown is pulling that volume lever, and there's still headroom in English football for more volume. You know, that's part of the reason, you know, the Premier League hasn't sold, you know, all of its games, is because, you know, being able to release more games in each new cycle does mean that you've got a little bit more volume to offer to broadcasters. I mean, you can incrementally at least keep the rights value flat, if not increase it. So that's the one lever that you can continue to pull. And to my point about the other leagues, they're maxed out. They haven't got any more levers to pull on that. They can't give more volume to their domestic broadcasters, at least. So they have to really focus on the other elements of their product, the quality, Jeopardy, connection. And Jeopardy is a massive issue in these other leagues. I mean, you know, you look at the Bundesliga, you know, it's an uncompetitive league. You know who's going to win each year. So there's no real lack of value there for broadcasters. So that I think the UK football market has got a lot of games on there, but there's still room for growth because you've still got that volume of games that you can release. But I think in time, you know, if the Premier League does become predictable, as it has been to a slight degree, you could argue with Man City over recent years, then there is a danger that the product starts to suffer, and therefore you know, the value of the product suffers, and therefore the rights don't continue to go up. So I think that's something that kind of want to keep an eye on over multiple cycles, I suppose. So we'll maybe have a catch-up chat in 4 years' time on that. And then, yeah, the women's piece at 3 p.m. I think is really interesting, and I'm really torn on this, actually. I'm quite a staunch defender of the 3 p.m. blackout, because although a lot of people say, oh, well, it wouldn't really affect non-league and lower league attendances, which I tend to agree with in the short term, I do think it would have a long-term effect of, you know, fans. You know, if you're talking about the 12-year-old kid who today might be dragged to a non-league game, you know, on a Saturday, 3 p.m., it is not going to be as inclined to do that if Man United are on the telly. And so I think the generational impact is one that's not often spoken about. And I think, so I'm quite a staunch defender, and I think I'm increasingly in the minority on that, on the Saturday 3 p.m. kickoff.
But can I ask Omar, just on that point, so are you saying Man United men's or are you saying Man United women's here?
Well,
because there's a lot of people arguing that there's a real different market for both, is the truth.
Yes, exactly. And I think that's the key point. So I was saying Man United men, I suppose. And this is like one of the most fascinating areas, I think, about women's sport at the moment, is who is the audience? And football is very, very different, I think, to the other sports. So having done some work in cricket especially, but also looked at other sports and some great organisations like the Women's Sports Trust who release data on this type of stuff as well. I think football, the audience for women's football is potentially quite different to the audience for men's football. And I'm not saying that just an opinion, that there's the surveys and research that tend to back this up. Whereas in other sports, there is more of an emphasis on converting your fans of the men's sport to the women's sport. Whereas, as I say, in football, it might be those two audiences that are different. And therefore, the extension of that is if you put women's football on at 3 p.m. on a Saturday, you're not actually taking an audience that might already be going to a non-league game on a Saturday 3 p.m. or an EFL game on a Saturday 3 p.m. You're just creating, you're just creating some content for a new fan. And therefore, you're not losing out. You're not damaging the potential match day income and the other bits of grassroots that exist around, or the grassroots economy that exists around Saturday 3 p.m. So I think it's kind of one of those topics that requires quite a bit of discussion and research as to who that audience is. I think there's a very good case to be made that Man United women playing at Saturday 3 p.m. is a very different proposition to Man United men playing at 3 p.m. in the same way that there are other sports that are shown on television on Saturday at 3 p.m. You've got rugby, you've got sometimes cricket, you've got tennis and whatever else is on a Saturday 3 p.m. But I suppose the argument is, A, you wouldn't be able to enforce a blackout on those sports, but B, it's, in many cases, different audiences. Your fan of rugby certainly is a different type of fan to the one in football. So I'm really intrigued to see where that goes. I saw a report today around the broadcasters and Sky in particular not especially supportive of women's football at 3 p.m. because they've got their flagship show Soccer Saturday, but TNT might be a bit more interested because frankly everyone watches Soccer Saturday and Final Score and not the TNT version of it. I'm really interested to see where that goes, and I do think it would potentially be good for the women's game, but I think it does need to, again, it comes back to audience and the fans, like who are the supporters of these women's clubs both in the short term and in the long term.
Yeah, and just taking a couple of those points on a tiny bit further, I read a great piece, it was a while ago now, I think a year or two ago, by Stefan Szymanski, who I'm sure you'll know well, and who was one of the prominent football economists, and still is to a degree. And he wrote a piece saying that actually women's football deserves the equivalent of some reparations, basically, because of the ban that was in place for so long in so many different countries, direct or indirect bans. And as a result, needs to actually be given priority and preference. And so the query is, in my brain, is whether that is that fulfills a number of the criteria, i.e. for trying to positively leverage a sport that, in my mind, is already a great product that I think is, I'm bought into women's football in a number of different ways, professionally and personally, in truth. But also, I wonder whether the amplification of it all becomes quite an interesting point generally. You could almost see, a terrestrial broadcaster taking it on at 3 p.m. on a Saturday and getting pretty big audiences, is the truth, which I'm sure, to your point, Omar, for Soccer Saturday and equivalents might be seen as a real competitor, in truth. Query whether, the Gen Z millennials or others could be watching a WSL game whilst watching Premier League, Championship and other games, scores as things were going on, in truth, as well, and whether you could actually be sort of multi-screening within particular things, which sounds quite cool, at least in my brain as I'm saying it right the second. But to your other point around there being different audiences, I think you're definitely right. I was hearing Southampton, head of Southampton marketing, women's team, talking about how they made mistakes effectively in thinking that their season ticket holders on the men's game would be interested in coming to watch their women's team play. And they realized it was a completely different demographic. But once they found their demographic, people were really interested. But it actually wasn't the over 50s season ticket holders that had the affinity to Southampton men's that were their target audience. So, anyway, just a couple of bits there, but I think this whole intersection between the amount of games that's going to be on, yet this golden period of the blackout period, which could actually massively enhance and amplify the women's game, could, I think, in my mind at least, be a real benefit. But again, that's my view on it.
I hadn't considered terrestrial broadcast for women's football on a Saturday 3 p.m., which, as you say, would be potentially transformative for the women's game. Because at the moment, the scheduling of the 6:30, is it, women's game on a Sunday is awful for match going audiences. I mean, it's, you know, who's, you know, if you think about the audience for women's football with kids and families, like a Sunday, you know, in the cold in the evening, you know, match finishing at 8:30, getting home at whatever time, you know, is not super friendly. Whereas it has worked actually from a broadcast perspective, because it's shouldered to the usually the biggest match of the weekend at 4:30 in the Premier League, and therefore you do get fans who kind of hang on and watch the women's game off the back of it. So whereas the 3 p.m. could be the best of both worlds, right? You've got it's great for match going fans because it's a Saturday 3 p.m. And it's also, you know, good for broadcast because it's a slot where there's very little competition. So yeah, we've obviously gone from Premier League to the WSL, but all of this is intertwined. And to your point, actually, around the Stefan Szymanski point, football really struggles sometimes to see, you know, how do we make the whole bigger rather than, you know, each individual part. And there is an argument that, you know, actually elevating the women's game at perhaps some expense, some small expense of the men's game, dare I say it, actually makes the overall pie bigger. But invariably, you will have losers in that process. And invariably, as we know in football, where there's some kind of vested interest, that there will be opposition. So, yeah, again, invariably, these conversations will happen a bit in silos because of the way that these organizations are operated, and they're all in some ways competing with each other. But I do think some element of collaboration actually could be better for the fans and the teams in the long run as well.
And I think maybe just to bring it back to where we started, Omar, in truth, which was, you know, I think the main takeaway that I got from this, from the latest deal announcement, was the stability that it brings for the Premier League clubs and maybe the pyramid to some degree. And, you know, I know a lot of our talks and conversations are always around transfers, on-field performance and everything that comes from it. You know, this deal, and the deal, obviously the current deal as well, going on to 2029, obviously gives amazing stability for clubs to be able to plan and to be able to actually, you know, work through their finances, whether that will ultimately lead to profit or break even or significant loss. I think obviously if I'm the owners of an owner of a Premier League club now, knowing that, or depending where I'm in the league, in truth, knowing that those revenues are going to be guaranteed because of those blue chip broadcasters into the medium term, it's a great win for the Premier League executive to be able to get such a long-term deal. And again, just very briefly, 4 years is relatively unheard of, usually because of the competition rules. They're usually 3-year cycles, in truth. So getting that extra fourth year, you know, query how that was achieved. But that fourth year obviously creates that even greater stability so far off into the future. Yeah, means there's significant amounts coming into the Premier League over almost into the next decade.
Yeah, exactly. And that's certainty that clubs in other leagues don't have and haven't had. You know, Serie A managed to get an uplift on its TV rights, but it was definitely uncertain. And French clubs must be, kind of biting their nails really as to what happens next there. So that's a big thing. And then I think everyone's fairly confident that the international rights will continue to grow in this cycle, just because of the size of the audience there, and that there's so many more fans that can be quote unquote acquired internationally. So yeah, I think all in all, a decent result for Premier League and Premier League clubs, and actually just more broadly for English football. But as we discussed, I think there's going to be interesting to see how things play out in the broader broadcast space with women's football in the EFL as well.
A great chat. I didn't think it was going to go in those directions, but great nonetheless, mate. Really appreciate chatting as always.
Good stuff, mate. Good evening.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening. You can follow me on Twitter, TikTok and Instagram at Football Law, read my blogs and listen to my previous podcasts via my website, danielg.com/blogs. Please do subscribe to the Done Deal Football Podcast, like, share and tag me. If you like the content, if not my voice, you'll probably also like my book Done Deal, an insider's guide to football contracts, multi-million pound transfers and Premier League big business. A bit of a mouthful. It's available to buy in hard copy, digitally, and via Audible. All links are in the podcast show notes. Lastly, the podcast is powered by 13, which is a fashion brand I've started. All proceeds go towards cancer charity research, and particularly the stellar work done by John Krell, who has helped my mum through some difficult times over the last few years. You can take a look at the merch and hopefully buy a t-shirt, hoodie, cap, or all three. Please do spread the word and go to 13shop.co.uk. That's 13shop.co.uk. Thanks for listening.